Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello there, and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast, very gratefully sponsored by Melio Health. Today, we're going to be talking about everything to do with non-invasive prenatal testing, or NIPT, as it's known. Melio Health are specialists in health tests that give you all the information you need to get and stay healthy. They work with the NHS Lab, Nottingham University's Trust, to provide NIPT tests to expectant mothers. If you're not familiar with non-invasive prenatal testing, in a nutshell, it's a test for a pregnant woman to find out if her child is at risk of a chromosomal abnormality, specifically Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, or Patau syndrome, aka trisomy 21, 18, and 13, respectively. Deciding whether or not to get a NIPT test is a decision in itself, and everyone has a different opinion about it. But I really thought it would be useful to talk to someone who can explain everything there is to know about NIPT tests. The person I'm going to be chatting to today is Dr. Donna Fullerton, and she is a consultant clinical scientist who is in charge of NIPT testing at Nottingham University's Trust, and she's working with Melio on their NIPT testing. With her help, we'll break down what you need to know about NIPT testing and include how it works and what it can really tell you. One of the reasons I wanted to do this episode is because in my experience, it is pretty common for those with IVF pregnancies or people who are pregnant after loss to opt for a private NIPT test. And when I asked over on Instagram, people came back with a variety of reasons, including that they've been used to being handheld through treatment and want information throughout their pregnancy as well for reassurance because of previous concerns with losses or poor embryos. Some people want to find out the sex, so we can talk about that. It might be because of our advancing age, because that's what happens sometimes when we go through IVF. There's so many different reasons. And there are a few different tests out there. You can find out specifically about Melio Health's NIPT test if you head over to meliohealth.co.uk/NIPT, N-I-P-T. And the link there will be in the show notes as well. But I just want to come over to you, Donna, really. It would be amazing if you could tell us a bit more about who you are and what you do, rather than just your title, because I know that so much goes into it, and then we can talk about the specifics of actually what NIPT testing is, if that's all right.
Yeah, no problem at all. As Kat said, my name is Dr. Donna Fullerton, but everybody calls me Donna. Nobody calls me Dr. Fullerton unless I'm in trouble. So my job title is I'm the consultant clinical scientist. So basically what that means is that I'm in charge of the NIPT screening test here at Nottingham. So it's part of my job to actually set up the study, to set up the analysis, and to make sure that all of the analysis is done to very, very high level standards, that all of the mathematics and the scientific principles are working correctly. And I'm also involved in the authorization of the results. So we here at Nottingham, we've actually had a lot of experience with screening for Downs, Edwards and Patau syndrome. So we've been doing serum screening here for over 25 years. But the reason I decided to try and introduce, or I have successfully introduced NIPT into our laboratory, is really because NIPT is a much more accurate test than we can currently offer with serum screening. And really what I wanted to do is to set up a screening service for NIPT that was much more accessible and provided the best possible care that we could to the pregnant women. And what we wanted to do was to use a technology that actually made it much more accessible in terms of a cheaper test than we'd actually seen advertised amongst many of the private companies. So again, so that more people would be able to access this screening service if they wanted to.
Brilliant, brilliant. Can we start right at the beginning? You mentioned their serum screening. What is that?
So serum screening is something which we provide to every pregnant woman, and it's available on the NHS as part of the NHS screening programme. And basically it means that you can have first trimester screening, and that actually takes place between 11 weeks and 2 days of your pregnancy, up to 14 weeks and 1 day of your pregnancy. You'll have a blood sample which is actually taken, and then we then actually look for two specific analytes, which are your free beta HCG and your PAPA. So they're the biochemical assays that we would actually run here in the laboratory. We take that information together with some screening information and from your scans. So we take the NT measurement, which is basically the measurement of the thickness of the neck of your baby. And we take that together with some of your demographic information, including ethnicity, whether you've had an IVF pregnancy, whether it's a twin pregnancy, to then actually be able to calculate the chance of your baby being affected with Downs, Edwards or Patow's. So if you miss that screening window in the first trimester, there is a second trimester screening which is available. Again, it's a simple blood test. And this time we actually look for different analytes, so different biochemical markers. And there's four which we actually use in second trimester screening. Just for completion, I'll tell you, but I don't expect you to answer a quiz at the end or anything like that. Yeah. But they're AFP, total HCG, unconjugated estriol and inhibin A. And again, we take that with your demographic information. So again, your ethnicity, the stage of your pregnancy and other details, including IVF pregnancies, whether it's a twin pregnancy. And again, we put all of that together and we actually use that to, again, calculate a chance of your baby actually being affected. And in the second trimester, we just look at Down syndrome. So trisomy 21, we can't look at Edwards and Patow syndrome in the second trimester. But currently that's available to every pregnant woman. So it's up to the pregnant woman whether she wants to have the serum screening. And within the first trimester, what I should also say is you don't have to be screened for all three disorders. So you can choose to be screened for everything. So Downs, Edwards and Patow's, you can be screened just to have a chance result for Down syndrome, or you can actually just have a screening result for Edwards and Patow's.
That's really interesting that you can choose. Like, I was not aware of that. People who know our story know we didn't actually have any testing at all. And we will talk about that, as I mentioned. But I didn't realize that you could choose to test for some, but not everything. So that's, like, that's first and foremost, like, that's just a really, really important piece of information. I thought, and maybe I'm alone in that, but I suspect not, that it was just a standard test and you tested for everything. Secondly, because I am an IVF mum, why is IVF included within, like, whether it's an IVF baby or not, why is that included within the markers?
What we're saying is when we do the biochemical analysis, we actually look for specific biochemical markers and we look at the levels of those markers. And during your pregnancy, some of those marker levels actually increase and some of them actually decrease. And that's why it's really important for us to be able to know exactly how pregnant a lady is, because we can compare it to what we would expect in an unaffected pregnancy. Those levels of markers, what they would be at that point in your pregnancy. So, for example, if you were 14 weeks and 5 days, we would know what the levels of those markers should be in an unaffected pregnancy. For example, if you had a pregnancy which was affected by Down syndrome, we would expect the free beta level, which we would measure in the first trimester, to be higher, and the PAP A levels would be lower. If you had a T13 or 18 affected pregnancy, those markers would be lower than we would expect with an unaffected pregnancy. And that's what we're doing. Now, if we have an IVF and pregnancy, we already know that some of those markers, just because they're an IVF and pregnancy, some of those biochemical markers will actually be different already from what we would expect to a natural non-IVF unaffected pregnancy. And we actually take this into account when we do the calculation in order to produce a chance. So we know whether you've got an increased chance result or a low chance result. So effectively, it's like we add a factor so that we don't give you false results, because we were already expecting those markers to actually be at different levels because it's a known IVF pregnancy.
And is that to do with the hormones and things? Why the differences?
I have to say, I don't think anybody actually really knows. So we don't understand the full pathophysiology, but there's been a lot of studies actually looking at different populations. And by populations, I mean different ways of becoming pregnant. And that's all of the data then, and the factors that we include within our statistical software when we're doing our calculations, actually take into account all of those studies. But I don't think actually anybody really understands the full biological basis for why there are those differences.
Can you talk to us about the fact that there are chances?
People's perception of what chance is and what is a high chance result is very different. So if I said, for example, to somebody that they had a chance of their pregnancy being affected with Down syndrome would be 1 in 5. So that would mean that out of 5 pregnancies, one of those pregnancies would be affected with that chromosomal condition. Now, for some people, they would interpret that as there's a 20% chance that they would actually have an effective pregnancy and an 80% chance that their baby and their pregnancy would be completely normal. And that's true. But I think what we have to do is put it into perspective of actually what the national threshold and what the national cutoff value is. So when we're talking about trans, and the threshold within the National Screening Service and for serum screening is 1 in 150. So if there is anything which is a higher chance, and by a higher chance, I'm saying that there has to be more in that 150 population which would have an effective pregnancy. So 1 in 150 is the cutoff, and that would be anything below that, so 1 in 49 all the way down to 1 in 1, that would be a high chance pregnancy. If there is anything which is low chance, it's actually going to be anything which is 1 in 151 and higher. But I think it's always putting it into perspective as to what the national cutoff is. So to me, as a scientist, a 1 in 5 chance would actually be a very high chance of your pregnancy being affected by that condition. But I completely understand that to a lot of people, that would be, there's an 80% chance that actually my pregnancy would be normal.
So if you are in the higher chance group, do you automatically qualify for these tests from the NHS? And if you aren't, that's when you would seek them privately if you chose to. Does that make sense?
So from the 1st of June of this year, NIPT testing will be offered within the NHS screening programme, but only to those women who had a high chance serum screening result. So if you had your serum screening and you had a low chance serum screening result, then NIPT wouldn't be offered to you within the NHS screening programme. Now, some women are choosing to actually have NIPT testing anyway. I certainly wouldn't recommend perhaps doing both. I think if you wanted to do an NIPT screening test, then I would probably make the decision to not opt for that serum screening test, because we know that NIPT is a much more sensitive test. And I think what the problems that we've had in the past have been that women have gone for more than one test and ended up with contradictory information, because you're not comparing two identical screening protocols. So we know that for serum screening, the detection rates really are around 80 to 85% for the first and second trimester, where really when you're talking about NIPT, the sensitivity is actually greater than 90%. So that means in more than 90% of cases, if you've got an effective pregnancy, you'll end up with an increased chance screening results. And the specificity is greater than 99%. And that means in more than 99% of cases, it can correctly identify an unaffected pregnancy. So if we're talking about NIPT within the NHS, you would be offered NIPT only if you had an increased chance on your serum screening results. And if you have NIPT within the NHS screening programme, you will not be given the gender of your baby. Now, lots of people are opting for the NIPT as a private test because they know that if they have a normal serum screening result, they wouldn't be offered the NIPT within the NHS screening parameters. Also, they know that they won't be given the gender of their baby. And lots of people are very excited and want to know the gender of their baby very early. But also, NIPT can actually be done earlier than your serum screening test. So at the beginning of our conversation, we said that if you had first trimester screening, the earliest you could have that was within 11 weeks and 2 days of your pregnancy. Whereas NIPT is actually available from 10 weeks of your pregnancy. So it can be offered slightly earlier. And for some people, that's very important because depending on the results of their test, they actually want to be able to have that information and make a decision about their pregnancy at a much earlier time.
Thank you so much. And just so, like, I totally hear that if you have the serum testing, then you don't want the NIP testing. But if you had the serum testing and your chances were, say, 144, 146, you know, you might opt to have the private NIP testing if you're not going to get it from the NHS. Does that make sense?
At those chances, that's actually a positive increased serum screening result. So you would
be
offered that for free.
I meant the other way. Apologies.
Yes, if you went the other way.
So if it was 151, 153, exactly, that kind of thing, yes.
Yeah, so under those circumstances, I think women are well within their rights to have NIPT, but unfortunately it's not available on the NHS and they would actually then have to seek for a private NIPT screening service. But I think lots of people are starting to realise that NIPT is a very sensitive test, and actually that's what they would like to do. And it's not because the NHS is really bad. I'm an NHS employee. It's not that we don't want to be able to offer it to everybody. It's just because it's actually a really new technology. It's a very expensive test to run. So currently at the moment, we can't actually bring that into the NHS screening program. But from the 1st of June, that's actually a 3-year pilot study which is being done to actually reassess the accessibility of NIPT, to check that it's actually performing the way that we would expect it to from the modeling. So it might be that later on, it might be possible that as more and more people want to have the NIPT, as technology evolves, that the test can actually become cheaper. And then it might be then that it's actually economically viable to do that on the NHS screening programme. But currently, we're not at that stage yet.
Okay, thank you. And we will talk about costs. But before, we've kind of talked about what it is. And we've touched upon what we are testing for. But can you talk to us about that in a bit more detail, about Downs, about Edwards and about Patow's?
So Downs, Edwards and Patow's are the three most common chromosomal abnormalities. So Downs syndrome is actually the most common chromosomal abnormality. And it actually occurs in an incidence of between 1 in 600 to 1 in 800 live births. And the reason we get Downs syndrome is because instead of having the normal two copies of chromosome 21, in these pregnancies, we end up with three copies of chromosome 21. So Downs syndrome, unfortunately, from the genetic test and even from NIPT, we can't actually tell the mum that how severely affected their baby will be with the Down syndrome. And what's important to realise is there's a very wide spectrum of clinical presentations. So some babies will be very severely affected and they will actually develop to have very severe intellectual and behavioural problems. And they can also develop cardiac problems. They can have problems with their kidneys, with their muscles and their skeletal function. And there can also be problems with thyroids. So typically where your thyroid doesn't work quite as, is not quite as active as everybody else. But then at the other end of the spectrum, there are many people who, many children who are born with Down syndrome who can actually grow into adulthood and lead very semi-independent lives. And I think that's why it's really important to be able to have the choice when you're having your screening. Because for lots of people, actually having a baby with Down syndrome is not an issue to themselves, and they don't perceive it to be an issue to their baby or the adult that they'll develop into. It's a little bit different when we're talking about Patow's and Edwards syndrome, simply because they are much more clinically severe disorders. So if we're talking about Edwards syndrome, that's another trisomy syndrome, which means that we get that genetic abnormality because we have three copies of chromosome 18 as opposed to the two copies of chromosome 18. This is a very severe disorder because more than 80% of children who are born with this syndrome will have cardiac abnormalities. They can also end up with cleft palates, and they don't grow as well because they have feeding difficulties. They can also have problems with their kidneys. And the sad thing about this disorder is that a large proportion of these children will actually die very early on, so within 2 weeks of birth. And actually only 8 to 10% of those children will actually survive beyond a year. So there's no treatment, unfortunately, for Edwards syndrome. It's purely supportive. And if we think about Patow's syndrome, again, it's very similar to Edwards syndrome, apart from this time you've got three copies of chromosome 13 and not three copies of chromosome 18. But again, it has a very severe clinical presentation. 80 to 90% will have cardiac problems. Again, you can see it experience problems with the cleft palates, with kidney problems, and they can have severe learning and behavioural issues. Sadly, unfortunately, the vast majority of these children, so over 50%, don't survive beyond a month of life. And only again, about 8 to 10% will actually survive beyond 1 year of life. And as with Edwards syndrome, there's no treatment. So it's purely supportive treatment. So you can understand why some people would actually want to be screened for these two particular conditions, because the clinical implications and the impact on yourself as a mum and also your family, if you've got other children, it's actually something that you would need to consider much more seriously. Not that having a baby with Down syndrome wouldn't be serious, but there's a much wider clinical spectrum of disorder presentations when you're talking about Down syndrome. So it's important when women go for their screen that they know what they're being screened for and make sure that they get the appropriate counselling and advice. And I would always say, if you've got any questions at all, please do ask them, because all of the clinical teams are trained to be able to answer questions. And if we can't answer the questions, we will certainly go and find somebody that can.
Thank you so much. And coming from the community that I come from, sadly, I am very aware of people who have had pregnancies where babies have presented with either Edwards or Patow's, or there are some other syndromes that might be tested for with further testing, and have sadly, and I never know whether to call it a decision, depending on who you're talking to, like, it is a decision, but it sometimes it isn't a decision as well, really, is it? But there are organizations like ARC Antenatal. There will be links in the show notes so that if this is something that affects you, you can go and receive support from that incredible charity and others. We are not here to make recommendations or suggest what people should do or cast any judgment at all. Like, this is about providing people with that information. But as you rightly said, if you are in this situation where you're going for chromosomal testing and, you know, whatever the outcomes, speak to your medical professionals. They will be able to provide you with the support and information that you need. Okay, so we know what we're testing for. We know when this happens. We've talked about the fact that the serum screening is, there's a scan, a blood test, and then if you have NIP testing, it is a blood test. So there's no risk to yourself or the baby at all with that. It's non-invasive, as we talked about.
There's absolutely no risk at all to yourself or the baby. I say all we simply require, we just need some blood, so maternal blood. And what I would say is, please don't be alarmed by the volume of blood that we need to collect for NIPT. It is a little bit different from the blood test that you're expecting to see. So if you've gone to a private company and all of a sudden they send you a kit and you see these very large blood collection tubes, we do actually require 10 mils of blood in order to be able to do the NIPT. And that's simply because what we're looking for when we do the NIPT test is we're trying to extract the cell-free fetal DNA from your maternal blood samples. And actually, the vast majority of that cell-free DNA, it actually comes from yourself, so from mum, and only about 10 to 20% is actually from the baby. So we do need quite a large volume of blood in order to actually get enough DNA material to actually do that test. So the vast majority of private labs will ask for two NIPT samples, simply so that if there's any problems at all with the first analysis, then we've got a second sample, which we can analyse without having the inconvenience of having to pull you back in for another blood sample. But certainly it's a very safe test and no risk to yourself or the baby.
Wonderful. Thank you. Now, this episode is absolutely being sponsored by Melio Health, and we are now going to talk about their tests specifically, because I think that's really important. But within the context of the fact that there are other tests out there and there is a variation in the results that they're testing for and the methodologies, I guess, that they use. So if you could share a little bit about Melio and perhaps some of the competition and tell us, you know, what the pros and cons are.
Yeah, I'll do my best. So obviously we work with Melio, and we provide Melio's NIPT service. And when you're actually looking in, there's a huge choice when you're trying to look for NIPT, if you ever do any Google searches or anything. And one of the first things that you need to think about is, how is the sample actually going to be collected? So if you book a test with Melio, you'll actually be offered an appointment at a phlebotomy clinic, which is the closest to where you live geographically. And they actually have lots of clinics up and down the country. So this makes the test actually very accessible. You book an appointment and then you will actually go to that phlebotomy clinic, and the blood samples will be collected by the phlebotomist, and the samples are then actually sent directly up to our laboratory here in Nottingham. If you have your NIPT as part of your NHS screening, because you've actually had an increased serum screening chance, those blood samples will actually be collected by your midwife in an antenatal appointment or by your community midwife. If you go for other private NIPT providers, they might have a similar service like Melio, where you would go to a phlebotomy clinic. But also there are other companies out there where they will actually provide you with a kit, which you can then actually take and have your blood samples collected either by your midwife or your GP. And the kits would normally comprise with an information leaflet telling you exactly about the specifics of the test you've requested. There will be a request form where you'll need to fill out your patient identifiable information. So it's usually information such as your name, your date of birth. If you're going to have your results sent back electronically, they might ask for some contact details for you. And then they'll also have the two blood tubes, so that when you actually go to your GP or your midwife to have those samples taken, you've got the correct blood tubes. Because for NIPT, we actually need these very special tubes, which are called Streck tubes. And that's just to make sure that the samples, once we've collected them, are stable. So another thing not to worry about, I think when we first set up the NIPT service, some people were very concerned that the blood samples were being collected in London, but we weren't in London. And were the samples going to go off as they were being transported? But all the NIPT samples, once they're collected into those tubes, they're stable actually for 5 days. So we've got lots and lots of time to actually get those samples up to us. So if you're looking at the NIPT test, there's a large number of different private companies, and they will all differ according to what they're offering in terms of the conditions that they are actually being screened for. And that's also, that depends really on the different technologies which they're using. So for Melio, it's a very targeted screen. We look particularly, well, only for trisomy 21, for trisomy 18 and trisomy 13, and we will also provide the gender of your baby. If you go to other private providers, so for example, Harmony is one which everybody is heard of if it's looking for NIPT, they will actually offer additional tests. So they will look for sex chromosome anomalies, where you might have heard of conditions such as Klinefelter's or Turner syndrome. They also offer a microdeletion study looking for DeGeorge syndrome. So whether you get more or less tests, it doesn't mean that the test is any better. It just depends what you're actually wanting to be screened for. There are also some companies out there that will also do what we call whole genome sequencing. And that's where they will actually pick up genetic anomalies against all 23 chromosomes. Now, if you do opt to go for that test, and I'm not saying it's a terrible test, just be aware that they will actually flag up an awful lot of information and an awful lot of data and some of the conditions you might never have heard of. And this is particularly common if you're selecting to send your NIPT test to an international private company. Particularly if you send them out to the USA, they'll come back with a very long list of tests that they've actually screened for. So again, it's just making sure that you get the right information and you know what you're actually being screened for, because the last thing you want is to actually end up with a very, very long list of conditions, and it might end up with a very ambiguous statement against your test report. And if you take that to the midwives within the United Kingdom would not actually be counseled against those specific conditions. So when you actually have your test results, everybody within the United Kingdom will report their results using either the terminology increased chance or higher chance, if it's an increased chance of your baby being affected with one of the chromosomal conditions that you're actually opted to be screened for, or it will be a low chance. And the reason that we adopted that terminology, particularly with the Melio NIPT test, is because that is in complete alignment with the way that the NHS has trained all of the midwives and the clinical professionals in terms of being able to understand NIPT screening results. If you're like me, I love all my science and all my maths, and some of the companies will also provide you, in addition to a very straightforward report, you can end up with an additional report with all the what we call Z scores and your chance results and all the specific testing results if that's what you require. But for most people, they're not interested in that. But again, it's just being aware of the different ways in which you can report your results. And if you do send your NIPT testing, particularly to an international company, they might also report their results. Instead of increased chance or low chance, they might actually talk about it in terms of risk, which is the terminology of chance, the one in 150, one in 200. So being aware of the kind of results that you're going to be reported back is always really important. And how are you going to get your results? So Melio do a very secure production of their reports, whereby you actually are given access to a Melio account, which is an electronic portal, which is specific to your individual request. So nobody else can see your results other than you, because you're the only person that actually has the passcode to access those results. And as soon as the results are actually reported by us here in the laboratory, we upload them onto the Melio portal. They are then actually validated by a trained clinical professional, and then those results will become accessible to you as the lady requesting that test, so that you can be reassured that the results have actually been readily verified by the laboratory. They're also again second checked and verified by a medical and trained personnel, and then that's when you would actually get your results and you can access on any electronic device. I think if you're going to choose between different NIPT tests, what I really want to point out to everybody is if you look at the statistics and that all of the NIPT companies actually provide, be really clear about what you're comparing. And what you'll tend to find is that people will use statistical terminology interchangeably. And you think you're having to look at them. And some people will report things like detection rates. Other people will report specificity. So all I want to reassure you is you do not need to be an expert statistician or have a PhD in mathematics to understand. You just need to make sure that you're comparing the same statistics. So anybody that talks about detection rate or sensitivity, that's when we're actually talking about how good is that test at actually being able to give a increased chance result in a pregnancy which is affected by that chromosomal condition that you're being screened for. If you're talking about specificity is how good is that test at producing a negative or a low chance result in a pregnancy which is unaffected by that chromosomal condition. You'll also see terminology such as the false positive rate. And the false positive rate is how many cases when they've actually done that test and they've had an increased trans result when the pregnancy has actually been unaffected by that condition. So my advice to you would be, if you're actually looking and trying to research NIPT tests, make sure that you understand the statistics that they're actually quoting at you. And to make sure that if you're comparing one against the other, that you can compare sensitivities or you compare detection rates, but you don't try and switch between looking at detection rate on one and specificity on another. And if you do, again, if you've got any questions, please just pick up the phone and actually speak to the companies, because all of them will actually be able to provide some advice. And they obviously can't recommend which test you should do, because obviously they're all out to make sure that you actually go for their NIPT test, but they'll all be able to answer questions and be able to talk to you about the statistics if that's what you're interested in.
Brilliant, thank you so much. And because when we get the results, it is all of that language and it can be an incredibly emotional time. Sometimes we just want someone, like you say, to talk to. With the Melio test in particular, do you get a report that kind of explains it? Like, who do you take that information to? Your midwife, will they understand? Your consultant, if you have one? Like, what do you do when once you have those results?
So we've purposely set up the reports from the Melio testing so that the reports are very clear. So if you've had a pregnancy which has an increased chance of your pregnancy being affected with Down's, Edwards or Patau's, it clearly will state the chromosomal abnormality and it will say increased chance. If it is a low chance result, again, it will have the specific chromosomal abnormality. So it will, and it will then say a low chance result. If you've requested gender, it's very clear on the request form, it will say it's a girl or it's a boy. What I do want to say is if you have actually had a twin, if you've got a twin pregnancy, you're eligible to have NIPT. But if you end up with an increased chance result, we're not able to tell you if it is one or both of your twins which are affected. So you don't get a twin specific screening chance. It's a screening chance result for your whole pregnancy. So that's important to know if you're actually having a twin pregnancy. But if you have an increased chance result, what I would always say is NIPT is still a screening test. It is a much more sensitive test compared to your serum screen, but it is a screening test. So before you would make any further decisions about your pregnancy, you should always discuss your results with your clinical team. So your community midwife, they've all been trained, because obviously the NHS is rolling out NIPT to be able to deal with queries regarding NIPT. And what you would do next with an increased chance result is, again, it's your decision. So some women will actually choose to accept the NIPT screening result and they continue with their pregnancy and they don't want any further testing. But the NIPT test doesn't give you a definitive diagnosis because it is still a screen. So if you want to then go and have a definitive test, you have to then go through an invasive test. And the invasive tests which are available are your chorionic villus sampling, which can be done between 11 and 14 weeks, or it can be your amniocentesis, which is a test which is available at women who present at a later date. And you would need to discuss your options with your midwife in order to arrange any diagnostic invasive testing. So it's not compulsory. Again, I don't want anybody to think that they have to go and have an invasive test, because with the invasive test, there is a small chance. So it's a 1 in 200 chance or 0.5% chance of you miscarrying your pregnancy if you have an invasive test. So it is a very, very low chance, but you do need to be aware that that is a possibility if you do go for invasive testing. But all of this you can be advised if you and discuss with your midwife.
Thank you. Now, I just want to talk about our personal circumstance at this point. You mentioned there if you had a twin pregnancy and, you know, you couldn't be specific. Now, we had an identical twin pregnancy, and we know that because we had only one embryo transferred and we lost one of our twins between 9 and 10 weeks. And because of that, we couldn't have NIP testing because we were going to have that testing. Probably we would have found out the sex, I think, but also just to find out, you know, like we had been through a lot, we wanted as much information as possible. Why couldn't we have it?
So in those circumstances, it's what we would call a vanished twin pregnancy, where unfortunately one of the babies has died during your pregnancy. And the difficulty we have when we're trying to do testing is that the baby that's actually died still actually is able to add genetic information and gives out cells still during the pregnancy, up to 12 weeks following the death of that baby. And unfortunately, that means that those the results that you would have from NIPT wouldn't be accurate, because it could be that you're actually assessing the genetic makeup of the baby that's died, and it wouldn't necessarily be specific to the baby that's actually still alive. And that's the reason why. It's just to make sure that we don't provide you with false and inaccurate results.
Yeah, I remember when you explained that to me several weeks ago, and it was the first time that I really understood that response. I had spoken to a number of people about it and really investigated it at the time. But yeah, you really made that very clear to me, and I'm really, really grateful for that. Are there any other reasons that you can't have NIPT testing?
Unfortunately, yes. I have to say, it sounds like a really long list, but it's actually going to affect a small number of women. So if you're a lady that's got a known chromosomal abnormality, so it might be that you know you've got Down syndrome, or you've got a different genetic abnormality that you're aware of, you're not able to actually have NIPT testing. And again, that's because you can actually end up with artificial results, and we end up with an increased number of false positives. And that's where you would end up with an increased chance result from the NIPT, but your pregnancy would be unaffected. So you can't have it under those conditions. If you're a patient or a lady that has a diagnosis of cancer, and it's an active cancer and you're not in remission, those cancerous cells actually multiply very, very rapidly. And when you have that situation, there are more chances that you can end up with genetic abnormalities occurring. And again, they can actually affect the accuracy and reliability of NIPT. So you're not able to access NIPT under those circumstances. Also, if you have actually been in any position where you've had to have a blood transfusion within the last 4 months, if you've had a stem cell transplant, a bone marrow transplant, an organ transplant, or if you've been given any immunochemical therapy as part of a treatment for cancer, what you've done by having those, and it's not because you've wanted to have those by choice, obviously, but we've introduced material from a donor or from other biological organisms. And again, the NIPT test wouldn't be accurate under those circumstances. And the other possibility is, if you're lucky enough to have a pregnancy which is more than twins, so triplets and above, we can't actually offer NIPT. And that's for the simple reason that we can't guarantee the performance of the test under those conditions, because multiple pregnancies are actually very rare, and we don't have enough data and enough information to have validated NIPT in those pregnancies.
Thank you. Like you say, there's quite a list, but you know, they're very specific examples. So, you know, yeah, not too frequent, hopefully. So we're getting to the stage now. So if you have got a high risk, a high chance, however the language comes back, and you mentioned already a CVS and an amniocentesis, can you just talk to us, in case there is someone out there with a high risk, you know, through those? In our situation, because we couldn't have the testing, we were really kind of thirsty for the knowledge. That doesn't feel like the right thing to say, but just like we wanted to know as much as possible. I was a bit older, you know, we did definitely have concerns. We hadn't done, actually, this is a good question. If you've had PGS testing on your embryo or PGD testing, like through your IVF journey, there's no need for the NIPT testing, surely, at that point, because they would have come back abnormal and you probably wouldn't have transferred them. Is that right?
That would be correct, yes.
Okay, great. Phew, we're all... Don't worry. I haven't found something that Donna doesn't know yet.
There's lots.
No, your reputation is intact. But in all seriousness, so we went to have an amniocentesis, and the way that that worked in my hospital was that because we didn't do anything initially, so we actually missed the window for the CVS. We did a lot of research around amniocentesis. The risk that I was made aware of was that it was a 1 in 100 chance of miscarriage. What you mentioned there was a little bit kind
1 in 200,
yes. Yeah, so that's interesting. Make sure that kind of people look into that and see what, I guess, their hospital is saying. Perhaps it differs per hospital, I don't know. So we had our conversation with our midwife, and then we were booked in for an appointment with the consultant. The idea being that we would have a consultation with that consultant and decide there and then whether or not we were going to have the amnio. And we had gone in having done lots of research, understanding the risks, with a pretty much 100% we were going to do this. So we made the decision that we weren't going to have the amnio. We had a full scan. The doctor was amazing, really talked us through, like went through all of, now as we know, Wren's kind of body and anatomy, and talked us through and said there were no physical markers that he could identify as, you know, being potential concerns. And we were able to step out of the room and go and sit in kind of like a cozier room on a sofa and discuss it just privately, myself and Bob. And we decided that the risk wasn't worth it. You know, we saw remember, there were no indications to suggest that there was anything wrong. I just want to point that out, because we hadn't been able to have the original testing. And we decided that we had just fallen in love with her. And that actually was when we found out the sex. So that was at 18 weeks. And we walked away without having it. Now, everyone's situation is different, and people are going to make the decisions that are right for them. And like I said earlier, there is no judgment here. This is purely about information. And, you know, I just want to share my experience, because people don't necessarily know that we went through that. But can you talk to us a little bit more about the CVS and the amniocentesis for anyone who, like me at the time, had not really heard of them, didn't know much about it?
I think it's important to say that the people that take these, that do these tests, are very, very experienced clinicians. So they will always make you aware of the chances of miscarriage, which are associated with the invasive procedures. But it's not just somebody that they pull off a ward. These people that do these tests actually have lots of experience. But if you're talking about a CVS, and that tends to be the invasive test, which is done earlier, so at 11 to 14 weeks. And that involves putting a thin needle through your tummy to take a small sample of the placenta of your baby. And then what we do is we grow up those placental cells, and we can then actually test the DNA. So that's why we actually directly testing the genetic material of your baby, so that we can confirm and the results either from a increased serum screening screen or from an NIPT. If you're thinking about an amniocentesis, we tend to do that later. So that's at 15 to 18 weeks. And again, it involves putting a needle through your tummy. But this time we actually take a sample of the fluid which surrounds your baby, which is known as the amniotic fluid. And the reason we can test that is because that fluid will actually contain cells which have been released from your baby grows. And we grow up those cells. And again, that then allows us to look at the DNA material and to actually look at the any potential chromosomal abnormalities present within that DNA and that genetic material. So they are the invasive tests, but they are the diagnostic tests. But again, it is entirely your choice. I would just make sure that it's an informed choice as to whether you go ahead and actually have those tests. And again, I can't reiterate enough that those conversations need to be had with your medical and your professional teams.
Absolutely, without question. And one of the things that I found really interesting, if that's the right word to use, is that during our conversation we had it was Professor Gordon Smith, and I have done a not as detailed conversation about screening with him. But during that conversation in our consultation, you know, he talked us through what the risks are. And I just found this quite, like I say, interesting, that I don't know if I'm alone in this. I assume you put a needle into my tummy when I'm pregnant, and I thought the risk was going to be about bursting the amniotic sac. And it isn't that at all, actually. And it is more about there being bacteria and an infection, and that then causing, you know, kind of the demise of the pregnancy, for want of a better phrase. Although I think that that's probably one that is used, actually. That's where I've got it from. And hospitals are clean places generally, you know, and actually none more so than now during COVID, where everyone is being extra precautious. But, you know, like that's the risk, isn't it?
I would say it's not the actual physical procedure, but it's the possibilities. And you're quite right. It's usually the risk of infection. But again, I will reiterate, hospitals are very clean. There are very, very strict protocols, and those protocols have always been in place. Particularly, I mean, during COVID, things have actually stepped up in a completely another level, I can say. But the risk of infection is very, very low, but it is a risk. So again, it's just something to consider when you're actually making those decisions, really.
Thank you so much. Like, we've covered an awful lot there. We really, really have. And, you know, as I said earlier on, if you want to find out more about Melio's NIPT test, you can go to meliohealth.co.uk/NIPT. And you know, Dr. Google is there to give you lots of information about this in general. But, you know, Donna is our expert, absolutely. And you are, as much as you're working with Melio, I just want to reiterate that you do work with the NHS, and kind of like lots of this information is information you've learned over the many, many years, I'm sure, in this area. But is there anything we've missed? Is there anything we haven't discussed?
No, I don't think so. I think the only thing that we perhaps haven't touched upon is the different costings and the pricings if you're doing it in terms of private NIPT. And one of the most common reasons I get telephones from women who are actually looking at NIPT testing is they want to know why is it cheaper in certain laboratories and by certain private companies compared to others. And again, I think that comes down to what you're wanting to be tested for. But also, lots of NIPT tests within the private sector are associated with scanning. So the ones that are associated with scanning, obviously you need to have a ultrasound and a sonographer and an appointment and a place to actually go and have that done. And those tests are actually more expensive. But don't be put off by some tests that are actually cheaper. It doesn't mean that they're not as good. It probably just means that they're offering either a smaller number of conditions or that they're actually not associated with a scan. It doesn't mean that those tests are actually cheaper because somebody's set up in a garage. That's certainly not what they're doing.
But do go to a good provider.
Do go to a good provider. Make sure you do your research. All of the companies will have patient information leaflets. All of the companies will be very happy to discuss the details of their testing. They'll be able to give you the statistics if that's what you're interested in. And just be really sure that you're picking your tests for the conditions that you want to be screened for, really would be my best advice.
Absolutely. And just on that, like I know Melio and I know the guys behind it, and I know that you're working with them and you are an NHS laboratory, and all of that gives me huge confidence in what they do. Is there, however, a board, like something, a certification that all of the companies adhere to?
Well, all NHS laboratories have to have something which we call UCAS accreditation. And basically, to be UCAS accredited, you have an external body which will come in and assess your laboratory. They assess your assays, so your actual biochemical tests, to make sure that they're performing correctly. They make sure that you've got enough governance procedures. And by governance, we're looking not just at do you have internal quality assurance programs, which means that when you're running a test, you're putting samples with expected results and that you get the expected results, which gives you confidence that your assay is working. But if you send samples out to an external provider, do you get the same results? So we have to do something called what's known as external quality assurance, which is where we all sent samples for each of the tests that we're accredited for. We analyze them and we return our results to an independent body who then actually check that everybody's got the correct result effectively. And then the UCAS accreditation visits, they actually happen every year. So every year a laboratory is assessed, and they are what we know as the ISO standards, ISO 15189. So all laboratories actually can apply for UCAS accreditation. It isn't compulsory in a private provider to be UCAS accredited, but for a NHS laboratory, all of the NHS laboratory providers will actually be UCAS accredited. So that, again, is something you can actually ask if you're trying to decide between different providers.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you. That's really, really great. And do you know what? There is one thing that we haven't covered, and that is you saying about going back and forth, is how long it takes for the results to come back for these kinds of tests for an individual.
Yes. We would love to be able to turn the test around for you the same day, because I'm completely aware that it's a very anxious situation, that you want the results as quickly as possible. But it is actually a very complicated scientific process. So the minimum amount of time it takes to actually do a test would be 3 days. And what you tend to find is that laboratories will all actually be able to report their results within 5 to 10 working days, because it depends when your sample arrives as to when we're actually doing that analysis. So it's not a test that we can actually just continually add samples onto an instrument or an analyzer and it churns out results on a day-to-day basis, because we actually have to have the right number of samples in order to get enough samples to do our really good statistics and to give you the best possible results that we can. We have to accumulate samples, and we will probably run samples in batches. And that's why we can't produce the results immediately. So all laboratories will actually work very, very hard to get the results out as quickly as possible. But the vast majority of laboratories will have to turn them around within 5 to 10 working days. And they will always be in touch with you if there's going to be a delay as well.
Brilliant. Thank you. Just sometimes having that information just makes things clearer and just makes us more patient, I suppose, because we understand. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for being the person behind those tests, because, you know, the side that we see is the anxiety and the nervousness and what feels like, you know, a 2-year wait for those results. And just, yeah, to have all of that explained is incredibly valuable. Thank you so much for joining us today, Donna. That's just amazing.
No, thank you for having me.
All right, then. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.